Hey guys, what's up? Welcome to another podcast here at CF. This day brought to you by Mr. B Clothing down at 1995 Northwest 86th Street in gorgeous Clive, Iowa. I'm going in to hang out with Tim Sitzman. Actually, on Thursday, we're going to begin Sitzman's picks as we predict every game on the Iowa State football schedule. Jeff Woody joins me for today's podcast. I'm a little bit optimistic right now, Jeff. I don't know if it's because it's August 12th and I'm just jacked for football. You know, we had the Hall of Fame game earlier in the week. I feel like they're sucking me right in, though. I feel like there's real optimism.
Like, God bless America, football's back.
No, I'm telling you, with this Iowa State defense, I went and watched practice last week, and this Justin Thomas is legit.
He looks like a football player. I mean, he's every bit of 6'5".
I'm kind of obsessed with Reagan Northrup. I'm obsessed with this guy. I think a lot like I felt about Kamari Cotton-Moya. Mm-hmm. First time I saw him, you just watch him and you go, this dude is a football player. Mm-hmm. I feel like Northrup is in that mix. The coaches see a lot from that Jay Jones at the same position. You all of a sudden have a little bit of depth on the defensive line.
It's weird.
Listen, I'm not saying clones are going 8-4. I'm not saying that. But I do know they're going to be better than they were the last 2 years.
Not very difficult to do.
This is true. This is true. I guess how to quote Paul Rhodes, all in should I be on this group? Because I'm feeling better about it. I feel much better about it than I did 2 months ago.
I'm in the same boat. And I'm going to go with the term cautious optimism.
Yeah.
Because they've won 5 games in 2 years. And like, that's an undeniable, it's not an insult, it's a fact.
Yeah.
Over the course of 2 seasons, you've won less games than Baylor has won by 70 points. So there's just a terrible statistic
there.
Yeah,
that's a bad stat.
But in the same light, the areas of issue they had last year were obviously defensive line, number one, first and foremost, and then offensive line depth. Okay, where did they go and fix those issues? Defensive line, they got a ton of JUCO defensive linemen a la Bill Snyder. Well, Snyder's, I mean, the vampire, his main MOA is recruit character guys out of high school and JUCO guys that he can turn into something. And Rhodes has done just that by getting guys like DeMond Tucker and Leith and Justin Thomas. And then because of how many people had to play last year at that defensive line position, then you guys have guys like Vernell Trent, Robbie Garcia, and Devlin Cousins, and Trent Taylor and Dale Pearson that all had to play. And by the end, you can say, I mean, Dale Pearson was pretty good by the end of the year. And so now
I think he, along with Cotton-Moya, was probably like the second or third best player on the defense the last like 3 games.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say, I mean, it's probably pretty close. And then you have other guys, and because of injury and different positions, that like Brian Mills at linebacker is just a brick house of a human being. And guys like that, where because of the stuff that happened last year and all the crap that happened, whether it's bad production, giving guys what Shane calls getting fired, where they have to get demoted, or by injury or by whatever, where they've just got a ton of people that played last year. Well, all of that playing experience is now actually playing experience for this year that you can check back on and say, I did this, this, and this. Everything as far as personnel, because of that experience, I feel pretty good about. The one thing that's leading me to caution is because the fact that there has been 5 wins in the past 2 years, and there's essentially, I don't know, I haven't been in the locker room, I've talked to a lot of guys and they say it's better and different, but if you've won 5 games in 2 years, you don't know how to win 8 games. So there's a time that you can figure it out, because we did. And I was on teams that, yes, it was different coaching regime and we started off pretty strong, but there are also times where like we went 5-7 in the second year, third year, picked it back up and went to a bowl game.
A lot of people will say the whole don't know how to win thing is a cliche. But it's not.
It's not.
According to what you just said.
It's not.
Explain that.
Because it's not necessarily a cliche, because there's a certain level of work that has to be done and at a certain effectiveness during practice. And this isn't during the game. The during the game part, that can come and go by leadership and by different seniors and whatever, where competitiveness says that we're down by 14 points, there are certain people that will check out and there's certain people that'll stay in. But on a game Saturday, it's not necessarily indicative of a team that is used to losing if they're down by 14 and they cash it in. That's just a lack of leadership. That's mm-hmm. not actually in the culture of the team, and why not knowing, quote, not knowing how to win is different. Where, quote, not knowing how to win is how hard I have to work during practice and how accurate I have to be, or accurate, as Coach Rhodes says. So what that means is, think about any job. So think about in your office, wherever you work, think about the people that are really good at their job and how thorough they are and how effective they are, not necessarily with communication with other people, unless you work in a job in which they communicate with someone. But for this example, let's say it's somebody that works in retail, because it's an easy example. You have 10 employees at Sportsman's Warehouse in Ankeny. They've got 10 people. Five of those people, every time, so there's a boom that comes in at 9, that clients leave at 10. Between 10 and 11, there's not a lot of people. Five good employees. What are they going to do? They're going to restock the shelves. They're going to make sure all the vending machines are nice. They're going to make sure everything's picked up off the floor. They're going to sweep. They're going to vacuum. And when they do that sweeping and vacuuming, they take the dustpan, they pick up all the dust, and they take the vacuum, and they make sure they get underneath the clothing racks and underneath the stuff that you don't think is necessary. Five bad employees, they're going to sweep the stuff up, but then they're just going to kind of push it underneath where the racks are. Mm-hmm. They're going to take all the clothes and, this Under Armour shirt goes over here and this Nike shirt goes, I'll put it with the rest of the Under Armour stuff. It's not that big of a deal. It's just one. Well, now, that's kind of a weird example. Follow with me here.
No, I'm digging it.
So those five people that are doing well, that is, quote, what I'm going to call a winning attitude. They do the little things. They understand what's done right. Now, if you've been for 2 years, the only people that have been around are 10 people like the bad employees. You may bring new people in, but what they have to learn from is the bad employees. So they may think there's something, probably had this before, if you've been around this situation, is you go, that floor is filthy. We probably should clean the floor, shouldn't we? I mean, it looks terrible for people to come in. But you ask someone, should we clean the floor? And they go, no, don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. So in something like that, because for 2 years, you've only seen laziness and you've only seen what, quote, working hard is not actually working hard. It's working hard in relation to the rest of the group. Well, now take that on the flip side. You get 10 good employees.
Yeah.
You bring a new person in. They're going to go, okay, there's nobody here. I'm going to vacuum the floor. I'm going to sweep everything up. I'm going to make sure all the clothing racks are straight. So the losing culture, is it possible to switch out of that? Absolutely. That's what they did when they got rid of the addition by subtraction population this fall or this summer with the guys like Ekby and guys like DV and guys mm-hmm. and TJ, those guys that weren't doing good things and were doing bad things, get them out of there. So maybe the guys that come in can help establish that winning culture of doing things right. So long story is,
no, it makes sense though. Yeah. Everything you just laid out makes total sense.
And am I optimistic because the personnel and the fit that the people have with experience, and we've got a lot of talent especially on the defensive side of the ball, and then skill positions are quarter. I'm so excited to watch Sammy this year. The wide receivers are great. Got a ton of talent at running back, just a little young. Offensive line is the most depth that we probably ever had. There's a lot, all the pieces on paper. If you were to take any emotion or culture out of it, you look at these guys in the field and you go, this team can compete. But I'm interested to see how the work happens. And you're going to get everyone saying that we're doing a great job. They're flying around at practice and they're doing this, this, and this. But you're comparing against yourself. I'm cautiously optimistic because I think they can. But if they don't, it could be like last year. If they do, they could take off running this year.
That's why I have such a hard time believing. Like, a lot of fans, I think, had their hopes up that this group could start 5-0. With the schedule, but that would be that culture shift that you're talking about. I mean, that had to happen fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I think this team can win 5 or 6 games, but I don't think that it's going to rattle off 5 to start. I see like a 3-2 start and a couple of upsets, or, you know, beating Kansas State and Texas or that are upsets, but not crazy. You know, Iowa State's been playing those two teams tough every year. I guess You know what I mean? Like, I'm not a believer yet that this group, based off of all the things you just talked about, can just, after winning 5 games in 2 years, win 5 in a row to start. I don't care who you're playing.
Now, my look at what I look at the season, and they're either going to win 3 games or they're going to win between 5 and upwards, if everything goes perfect, say 8. I mean, it's...
Come on, Jeff.
There's a couple.
Don't pee on my porch and tell me it's raining, man.
So it's either going to be 3 wins or it's going to be a pretty good season.
Yeah.
I don't think there's going to be a lot of middle ground because of how the schedule's set up. Because you got a team that, even though they had a playing experience, they don't have a lot of success experience. So they don't know, I guess, they don't really know what winning is. But once you get a sense of winning, then you want to do it more. So if you don't win and you've never won before, then you kind of just chalk it up as whatever and you just keep going in your daily life. So how the schedule's set up, with everyone knows it's, you know, home against UNI, home against Iowa, at Toledo, home against Kansas, at Texas Tech. So in those games, so say they beat UNI by, I don't know, 14 points.
That's the key, game. It sets the tone for
We'll get to that in a little bit.
Okay.
So beat UNI by, say, 14 points. Then we beat Iowa just by any measure, whatever. Then you've won 2 games in a row against rivalry games, where sometimes you can chalk that up just at being a rivalry. Say then you go to Toledo and you're confident coming off the first 2 and just obliterate Toledo and win by 25 points. Well, those 3 build on each other. And then this
should beat Kansas.
Should beat Kansas at home, knock on wood. But then you look at all that situation and go, okay, well, we've got a lot of inexperienced JUCO guys. We got a lot of guys that have not really on defense that haven't played a ton, but they've played. And now we know what winning's like. So now we know what it takes to win. So if you get that, I guess, relatively young team, which I don't think there are many seniors.
No, and that's why, like, this don't panic on the recruiting trail, fans, because there's just simply not that many scholarships to give.
Right.
I think they're only going to have, like, 12 to 15 in this class.
Yeah.
Depending on, I mean, attrition.
JUCO.
Yeah.
JUCO is where all of those
There's
going
to be attrition, too. So I say 15, it may be closer to 20. Like, you just don't.
Right.
Somebody's going to get kicked off. I mean, it happens every year.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as far as seniors go, there's only, like, I want to say, like, 13 to 15, something like that.
Yeah, so I don't think it's even that high.
I mean, it might not even be that high.
Yeah. I mean, I know last year there was, what, 10? Not even?
Yeah, but
10?
Then they
kicked off
so many guys from the team, yeah. And they had more to give at that point. What's – I don't want to go position by position because that seems just like such a trendy – like, we've all – like, the people who are listening to the Cyclone Fanatic podcast know what Iowa State has coming. But the one spot we do need to touch on today – as Jeff Woody joins us here. I guess before we do that, you're going to be with us a lot this upcoming year.
God willing.
God willing. So Jeff is going to be our, of course, I do the afternoon drive show on KXNO now with Ross Peterson.
Fanatics, not the Cyclone Fanatics.
Yeah,
sports fanatics.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was a hard sell to Ross.
Yeah.
Well, actually get anything near Cyclone something.
No, that was all like KXNO's idea too.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
I believe Keith Murphy was the one who came up with the name.
Keith runs that place, doesn't he?
No, he doesn't run the place, but he's a very well-respected man for obvious reasons. So you're going to join Ross and I with a Hawkeye. We don't have that one completely done yet, but we'll have a Hawkeye. I think I know who it's going to be, but I don't want to say it just in case it's not like a done deal. But you'll be
I'm there, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, that's it. From 5 to 6 every Monday.
Yep.
To react to the weekend games. And then you will be hosting the pregame show with me.
Yeah, I need to.
On KXL.
I need to bench press a lot more weight to fill in the shirts of Tron.
Yes, you do.
I'm a strong dude, but like you look at Tron and.
How about this? How about you and I on our way up to Ames, we run by North Ankeny CrossFit up there and we do a quick workout.
But all of it is push ups.
Yeah.
Just nothing but push ups, bench
and
press.
Push press.
And just bro reps.
Yeah.
Of just. Bicep curls.
Yeah, I was going to say, can we do some curls?
It's discouraged in a CrossFit to do curls, but we could. I mean, I don't think Sean's going to.
You guys aren't big glamour muscle guys.
No. Well, you do everything else well. You develop the glamour muscles.
Yeah. Well, this is good. This is good. So, no, we're looking forward to it, man. You're going to do some writing for us?
Yeah, I will. I'll chip in a lot of players' perspective type stuff.
Good. So that's what we want.
If there's anything, I mean, a guy like I kind of started working on something when I get a little bit of free time tomorrow. I'll start writing, what does it mean to lose a backup center? Because
that's a good transition.
Last year, you lose Ben Loth, and you think that it's not a big deal. You think, oh, backup center, whatever. Well, then Tom Farniak goes down the first game, and your starter then becomes a third stringer at the most important position on the offensive line. And why? And more to come later in the article.
That's exactly where I was going to go with this. Patrick Scoggins, the JUCO, mm-hmm. goes down. You talked about addressing depth mm-hmm. with JUCOs in the recruiting circuit last year. That's exactly what Patrick Scoggins, he was brought in to start. I don't mm-hmm. know if he was, I don't think he was probably going to, mm-hmm. but he was brought, you don't bring in a guy like that unless you want him to start.
Right.
Especially a spring JUCO like Patrick Scoggins mm-hmm. was. It's not like Bobby Leith, who came in here a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. He goes down. It brings Nick Sievers yep. up on the depth chart. I don't know anything about Nick Sievers.
He's a redshirt sophomore. He was there on the team when I was there.
Okay. Now this is, you can tell me if this is unfair. This is why I like having you. Nick Sievers is third string for a reason. He's been in the program for 3 years. I don't believe that he'll be the backup center.
I would – we'll see what they do because –
can't you just move a Mole or Daniel Burton over if Locke would go down?
If either one were to be moved down, it would be Burton. However, I was thinking about this when Scoggins went down because I knew I was going to do this podcast, and I was thinking of an analogy. Now, let's take out of football context for a second. So what a center does with the offensive line, but oddly enough, there's five of them. On a basketball court, there's also five. So think of the center as the point guard, where you – Monte Morris. So Monte Morris is our center. Now, is he necessarily going to be the biggest – point scorer? Is he necessarily going to be the one that gets the most rebounds? Is he even necessarily the one that gets the most assists? Traditionally, yes, but not necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's just the fact that he makes sure everybody is in the right area. So now, let's not take Monte because I don't want to jinx it. So Chris Paul, because he gets injured all the time. So Chris Paul, say Chris Paul sprains an ankle. Well, you have to then fill that role of whatever point guard is. So would you rather have a backup point guard who's familiar with facilitating but doesn't necessarily have the same type of tools of coordinating, or maybe not have the same type of tools, meaning shooting? He may not be the best shooter. He may not be the fastest. He may not be the best rebounder, but he can coordinate the offense and make sure everybody's in the right area. Or do you take a shooting guard and do you take Matt Barnes and move him to point guard and have the offense run through Matt Barnes? So do I do that or do I put in a backup center? Now, that's kind of the two kind of sides about it, is where in this analogy that Chris Paul is obviously your best choice, and that's no question. Mm-hmm. But his backup is, do I play someone that knows how to handle the ball but doesn't have the physical tools to be an offensive threat, or do I put in a shooting guard that has more physical tools, but it's going to be more of a disjointed – excuse me, my alarm went off. It's going to be more of a disjointed offense. It's going to be more, this guy can score, this guy's – in football context, this guy's stronger, quicker, is a better technical blocker, but it's not going to organize the five guys the right way you need him to. So, to answer the question, is there a chance that they could move any one of them over? And if they do, it would be Burton, like I said before. Daniel Burton's the only one that's like mentally fit to be a center, okay, because you have to be really smart.
So don't put Amole in the mix.
Oney is really smart, but he's not quite decisive enough to be a center, because it's one of those things where at the center, if I'm going down, I'm going down swinging.
Is it a demotion from guard? Like, would a guy like Burton, who Paul Rhodes has said numerous times he thinks Daniel Burton is an all Big 12 type of guard. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm Daniel Burton and I say, hey, I need you to move to center, how do I view that? You know what I mean? There's more responsibility, so you can't. Do you not hit as much? You know what I mean? How would a guy like Burton view moving to that? Because we've seen it a lot. Mm-hmm. Reggie Stevens did it. Mm-hmm. Ben Lamacque did it. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of these big dudes.
Alvarez moved it.
Alex Alvarez, yeah. So, like, how does Burton view that if he's asked to?
It's the same way that Naz would view moving to point guard, where It depends on the personality and it depends on the person, but you're not going to score as much. You're not going to get as many pancake blocks.
Does that hurt him like going forward, like his NFL tape?
I don't know. And I would think that if you show the ability that you can be a center, then it makes you – I would think it increases your, I guess, mental stock. But if you're a guy that's kind of on the fringe of, you know, say as Burton probably is going to be, he'll have a shot at the NFL. Mm-hmm. But he's going to have to prove that he is really good in order to do it. And your chance to prove that you're really good with pancake blocks, with picking up a lot of double teams, with making sure that twists and blitzes and stuff like that are picked up properly. Center, you've got to put a ball between your legs, get your head back up, and look around at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's a really quick transition. So a lot of times you're going to get stuck with doing the best that you can. So a center's blocking is a lot harder than a guard's block. So how would Burton view it? I don't know. I mean, I think knowing Daniel, I think he'd just be like, oh, sure, cool, whatever. I'll do it if you need me to. But I really doubt that they're going to want to do that because that's what they did last year with Jameson. The other reason why I say not to is because you, in the same sense of the basketball analogy, you want the five guys on the floor with that point guard to be running as many reps as they can with that guy being the point guard, because then they understand the flow. They understand his preference. He's not a great passer to his left. He's a great passer to his right. Bounce pass into the block. Fantastic. Say backup point guard can throw to his left. Great. Can throw to his rest. Right. His bounce passes are terrible, but I got to understand that, because if I played with the same attitude as with the starter, then the offensive entry passes are going to be completely different. So in the same light with a center, I've got to understand, I'm going to take as many reps as I can at center with centers, because then I can understand where my calls are going to be, because a lot of it is personal preference. Sometimes there's what a center does, just a kind of an overview, is they set the offensive line blocking scheme. So they're last year, we were spoiled. I mean, our centers have been fantastic with Farniok, with Lamach, with Alvarez, with Reggie Stevens. We had fantastic centers. So what these guys are going to do is they're going to say, okay, there are four linemen down. There's a guy that's just off my left shoulder, and there's a guy that's a man and a half to my right. So that's my line front. Now, if I look up at the linebackers, there's a linebacker that's stacked directly over top of my head, and there's one that's over the tackle, and there's another that's over the other tackle. So this is what I'm looking at. Now, with the play that was called, I'm going to say that the center of the blocking scheme is the one that's the linebacker that's right over my face, because the double team, if I set that, then the double team's going to work through that three technique, the one that's to my right, that defensive lineman's to my right, going to work through that double team to the Mike linebacker. I'm going to block this guy just to my left, and the guard is going to go up to the other linebacker, and we're going to be covered, boom, boom, boom. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty cut and dry example. Now, let's say a safety rolls down and is standing right next to that linebacker. Who do you pick? That's personal preference. If I want to set the blocking scheme on the safety, I set the blocking scheme on the safety. If I want to set the blocking scheme on the Mike linebacker, I set the Mike linebacker. But a lot of times, you don't have enough time to effectively communicate that. So if I don't know what his preference is going to be, so like Tom, always liked to ID front side. Always liked to ID on front side. So meaning, say we're running to the left and we're in that situation, and there's a linebacker that's just off my left shoulder, and there's a safety that's just off my right. Tom is always going to ID the one on a left side run, the one on the left side, just because that's his personal preference. That's the way he liked to do it. Other centers would ID the one on the backside. Depends on each situation. Guys get a feel as to what they're going to identify. So there's not enough time to communicate it, or you're in Darrell K. Royal Stadium with 110,000 people, mm-hmm. and you can't hear them. Then you're just going to know. The offensive linemen are going to know, okay, Tom identified this, or Jameson identified this. So if Burton gets thrown in and he doesn't have time to practice, they don't know his preferences. The calls might be right, but they don't know what they are. So my opinion, if the new backup center should be, would be Seaver, sink or swim, or a center, sink or swim, whoever that may be, that's playing exclusively center, not bouncing back and forth between guard and center, because they may be more talented, but it's not going to have the same continuity and the same confidence as a center in making calls.
It's hard to argue that, the way you put it.
Thanks.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know more about it than I do. I always say with the offensive line, I always call Ben Bruns. Seriously, if I ever have questions, I just call Ben.
They all do a lot of different things and a lot of very important things, and they're all different from right to left and center to guard to tackle. And if you don't know what they do, it's kind of like looking at a car engine.
Yeah.
And
I can tell when a guy gets beat.
Yeah.
I mean, like, being a Vikings fan, you watch Matt Coyle. I know every time he gets beat. And then you get trained to watch him get beat. And then it just – but it's hard to tell when a guy's doing his job. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't just stand out to you.
Yeah.
It's like a kicker, really.
Yeah. Well, it's also it's like a car. It's like a car engine. Oh, there's something clunking in there. And there's smoke coming out the tailpipe.
Mm-hmm.
Something's going wrong.
Exactly.
I don't know what it is, but there's something wrong in there.
It's just interesting to me. Here we are, like, all offseason long, the conversation was, man, this offense is finally ready to go. It's going to have to carry the defense. The defense is going to be terrible, et cetera. And I feel like here we are damn near 20 days to kickoff. And I have maybe I'm wrong, but I have more confidence in the defense right now.
I mean, don't let the fact that, yes, a backup center was hurt.
No, it has nothing to do with that. It's more, I don't trust this line anyways until they prove to me that they're any good. I'm sorry. I just don't trust
That's fine.
Sam, I agree with you on all your great points you've made about Sam. And I'm a Sam Richardson guy. I think he's the starting quarterback. I think he should be. Mm-hmm. I think that his 0-15 record as a starter in the Big 12 has a lot more to do with everything else around him than it did him. I think it's unfair to just solely pin that on him. And I think the wide receivers are going to be great. I think it's probably the most talented group of wide receivers I've ever seen at Iowa State, without much question. And I know there's talent at running back, but there's still a lot of questions about the offense, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, this is the best way to put it. How the Texas game, and I posed this question to Sam Richardson down in Dallas. Remember Texas and Toledo, those games last year? They were really cranking, really playing well.
Mm-hmm.
How can that offense consistently look like it did in those two games?
Sometimes it doesn't happen that they're super, super consistent because take, again, say Reggie Miller, Ray Allen, just for basketball analogies because I know you're a basketball guy.
Yeah.
So sometimes, I mean, Reggie Miller and Ray Allen are going to shoot 45% from three just because they're just great shooters. But every once in a while, they're going to shoot, 4 of 17 from three just because that's the way the thing happens, where offense is so coordinated that everybody has to be doing the perfect thing. Well, if one guy's a step slow or half a step slow or half a count late or anything like that, the whole thing gets thrown off. Now, to answer the question, how do we become more consistent? Because there's not a lot of times that you're going to be firing. Like the Texas game, the times that you're going to fire on all cylinders like that are very few and far between. I mean, even a team like Oregon is going to, every once in a while, instead of putting up 65, they put up 40, where they're not clicking on all cylinders, but they're doing well. How you minimize the big troughs is what you look at. And how do I minimize those troughs is to establish an effective run game. Because the run game takes an effective run game takes a lot of the variable components out of it. Because it's such a more condensed space, there's less margin for error. In the same sense that if I'm throwing or if I'm hitting a golf ball, if I can work on my short game from 15 yards out, a missed shot from 15 yards out, a bad shot, is going to be, instead of being 15 feet close to the pin, it's 10 feet close to the pin. Where if I'm using a driver, a missed shot from the same degree of missed shot off the driver is going to be 55 yards wide. So the magnitude of misses is a lot bigger in the passing game than it is in the running game. So how do we minimize the troughs is we establish an effective running game, which we haven't had since Alexander Robinson.
Correct.
That we can do damage, say 3, 4, 5 yards a pop. And then when the offense is really clicking, those 3, 4, 5 become 5, 6, 7, 10, 20, 60 yards. So the running game is what minimizes the issues. So how is that going to be different than last year? We have like in the podcast we did during the summer, I said we have maulers. Like, I want maulers at offensive line. Mm-hmm. Well, Burton's a mauler. Taisei's a mauler. And Brock Daigle, I would consider a mauler too. So you got three guys there. Now, they all have to stay healthy. I think my only question with the offensive line is health and depth, because I don't know anything about this J.P. Filbert kid. I've never seen him play. I've never
He's
seen
confident.
His film. He's confident. So is every other JUCO kid.
He, like, I don't know if he's any good either. He looks like a player, though. Like, he stood out to me at that open practice last week.
Just big?
Yeah, I mean, he's a big dude. I mean, he's listed at 6'4", 305.
And that's probably just after he went to the bathroom in the morning type 305, or is it after a big lunch 305?
Probably after he went to the bathroom.
Good.
Yeah, honestly, like he, but that doesn't mean he's tough though. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like I don't know. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But he was running with the ones when I saw him, and that was his first day of camp.
Yeah.
But that was, I think, because
Diggs.
Daigle, yeah. Like, I think it had to, he's not going to beat out Brock Daigle, but I think that they're probably just taking it easy on him.
And they're, I think they're doing with Daigle what they did, like, with Alexander Robinson earlier, where they know he's sort of injury prone just because how his body's set up. So they're just going to give him as much reps as he needs to get to be effective, but not overdo it.
Filbert's a depth guy. I mean, let's call it what it is. He's not he'll start eventually, but they didn't bring him in to start immediately. They knew they had two good tackles as long as they were healthy. I don't know, man.
We'll see.
I just don't. It's hard for me to trust an Iowa State offensive line anymore until I see it, especially when you lose Farndog, man.
Farn. The Viking.
Yes. Is he going to make the team?
I don't know. He did well. He had a pancake.
He played very well the other night. Yeah.
He had a pancake. I think all his IDs were right. I mean, obviously, I don't know the running scheme, but didn't look like there were, like, you can tell when an ID isn't right because some guy comes scot-free and everyone's accounted on someone. Mm-hmm. So, like, five guys blocking five guys and there's a guy right in the face of the running back. Well, we're blocking five guys, but there's a guy right in the face. It means the ID was probably not right and it should have been a different one.
How much, speaking of that, these young running backs, I feel like if you just hand them the football and say run, they're all going to be okay. But there's so much more to the position than that. You know, as far as your blocking, those type of things. Is that going to be the struggle with these guys? Is it going to be holding on to the football? I mean, what are you concerned the most about for Tyler Brown and Mike Warren?
For Tyler Brown and Mike Warren, my biggest concern is something that veteran running backs know how to do that younger running backs traditionally don't. And that is what's called pressing, where we're pressing the hole. It's not trying to necessarily go fast, but pressing the hole. Meaning, if the entire flow of the play is going left to right, and say there's a hole between the center and the guard, what I know is that there's a hole right there. Say it's 2.5 yards wide enough for me to run through. If I directly put my foot and run straight through the middle of that hole, at some point, because the flow of the play is going left to right and I'm cutting across the stream, the linebackers, the defensive line, everything, the flow of the play is going to hit me from the side and I'm not effective anymore because I tried to go straight up and down. How that works is in high school, you're way faster than everybody else. Like I was in playing in Iowa, good running backs are when they play against whatever they're playing. You see a hole, you just naturally stick your foot in the ground and go because it's open. It's there. There's a doorway.
It's your instinct.
It's a doorway. It's right there. It's all I'm doing. I think I can get through it, so I'm going to get through it. Well, what pressing the hole means is I see a hole that's 2.5 yards wide between the center and the guard. I have the backside guard. So the guard's on my left, center's on my right. I have to run up to the center's heels, and I almost run past him until I put my foot in the ground, and by the time I put my foot in the ground and get what I'll call vertical, the play is going to continue, or is going to push sideways and open that lane in front of where I'm going to be instead of where I am.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nothing that you can teach by concept and saying, like, you need to do this and you need to do this, you need to do this. It has to be taught by experience because it's something that I can tell you till I'm blue in the face, but you don't believe me that it's not going to be open if you just run upfield. You don't have the patience or the physical capability to think, I have to take one extra step or two extra steps to get to where this line is going to be. It's a completely change. It's a change of shift. It'd be like telling you to tie your shoes different, where you can conceptually get it, but you're so used to doing it one way that if I have to tell you to change it, it's going to take a lot of thought right away and it's not as quick. And if I have to tell you to change your shoes and you have to do it or tie your shoes in a different way and you have to do it in less than 3 seconds, or I'm going to kick you in the face, the pressure is then higher. So it's hard for me to do it quickly if I do it in a game right away. Now, to counter that, I think what I've seen from Mike and Tyler is that they get it. They get how to press. And I think that's the biggest question because blocking –
Is that overrated?
Overrated in a spread offense because in an I formation, there's a lot more required of you because there are, it takes longer for the quarterback to get there. So there's a lot more, there's a ton more blitzes that they're going to bring that can be creative because the defense knows they've got an extra three quarters of a second to get to the quarterback. In a shotgun, a lot of the game is making sure that I just don't totally miss someone. Like if you get railroaded, even as a running back, if you just get plastered, but you stop him and he has to restart running, by the time the quarterback throws the ball, it's done anyway, so it's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
How sacks happen in a spread offense are either A, the quarterback hangs on to it too long, or B, somebody just gets whooped. And either whooped meaning like not putting a hand on anybody because they missed the blocking assignment, or like right off the bat, Sean Oakman swim moves whoever the tackle is, and then he goes from, instead of 0.00 seconds, from like 0.2 seconds, he has a full sprint to the quarterback. That's how sacks happen. There's not a lot of time usually for a quarterback to go back, drop, hitch, and then throw, like in an I formation where it's all the way drop, hitch, and then throw. So it's an extra probably two seconds on a five-step drop. So the blocking aspect of being a young running back in a spread offense, it's kind of overstated, because the other thing that being a spread offense allows you to, this is my favorite part of blocking as a running back, is chop blocks, where I literally throw myself at your legs. And, excuse me, if I'm going to block a 265-pound defensive end, I don't want to stand up on him. All I'm going to do is throw myself at his legs. If he has to jump over me, he has to restart speed. Or if I hit him, he has to restart speed. That little tiny chunk of time that I take away from him is going to prevent him from getting to the quarterback anyway. So the big thing with these running backs is understanding how to press a gap instead of opening, or see the opening, hit the opening. It's see the opening, take a step, create a bigger opening, and then go.
So you think Iowa State can win with these guys?
Yeah. If you have a good offensive line,
yeah,
I could teach you how to be a decent running back. And you just run to the right spot and just fall forward and you get 3 yards.
Well, I mean, yeah, you've seen a lot of examples of this, like we're good running back. Like just Iowa, for instance, if you look across the state. I mean, how many running backs have they lost in the last?
And what was the kid's name? Number 34, he was
that walk-on kid.
Cromer?
Are you talking about like 10 years ago?
No, it was back in when I was in like a sophomore. I think he was number 34. He was he got arrested for like sexual assault or something like that. But he was an average running back. You watch him on film. Like a guy like Brandon Weger was actually a good running back. He was just not smart.
Yeah.
But yeah, got good running backs. Like Weisman's not a bad running back. He's like me if I wore 44 or whatever his number is and played at Iowa. It'd be the same thing. But that guy, like Cromer or whatever his name is, or Krusty,
It don't matter.
Yeah. That offensive line, Ferentz knows how to coach him.
And that's why
onto a spot.
And that's why I'm so worried about the offensive line, because I realize that if it's not very good, like I don't see how this offense can live up to its potential.
So
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In order to think that Iowa State's offense is going to be this vastly improved, well-oiled machine this year, I'm not worried about Sam Richardson. If that offensive line is good, I feel like this offense could be
really dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if they're below average, it's like, why should we think it's going to be different than the last year?
And that's where it lies.
Yeah.
That's where the giant, 700-pound gorilla is the offensive line going to be better? So I think,
is it fair for me to say that's the most important position group on the team this year?
Defensive line's the most important.
Okay.
Because they were so bad last year.
Yeah, it was terrible.
That the offensive line is number two. So on either side of the ball, it's going to be, they've got guys recruited. They've got enough talent everywhere else. And they have enough talent at the offensive and defensive lines. Now it's just a matter of consistency and effectiveness is how good can they be right now.
Speaking of the defensive line, I guess we don't really know too much about it, but we did see, and Paul Rhodes talked about a little bit about a 3-4 front. This was last week at the open practice. Have heard some rumblings in the offseason. We talked about it in the spring. I mean, it's not a secret at this point. What do you think about that? I mean, when you look at this defense, it's interesting to me. This is how I would, if you were to break down the depth chart on defense, I would say that linebacker is the position where they had the least amount of depth this year. Defensive end, I really like the end. Trent Taylor, Justin Thomas, who we haven't talked about yet. Dale Pearson, we mentioned him. You've got a JUCO coming in and Gabe Luna coming off a redshirt. Don't really know what he is.
I've heard Gabe is just a tough SOB.
Okay.
Just his personality is that he's like kind of like a Corey Morrissey in the sense of like he's just – you can hit him in the face with a tire iron and he's going to come back at you.
Damon Tucker appears to be the real deal at nose guard.
Yep. But let's temper our expectations with Damon Tucker here, because where his main issue is going to be – he's a fantastic player. I've seen him play in the spring game. I saw him in a couple practices in the spring. I've seen him in on film. The dude can flat out ball. But because he's at a JUCO, one of the biggest things with the JUCO is conditioning, is how good of a shape can you be in? And as a defensive line, or as a defensive lineman, it's hard to get in really, really good shape that you can play a ton of reps. So Damon Tucker right now, about three plays in a row, he can be a dominant force, like a Jake McDonough, where he's pushing someone back in the backfield 3 yards and the entire play is then disrupted from it for three plays. That fourth, fifth, sixth play, he kind of checks out. And that's just it's an attitude of a lot of JUCO guys have it. And one of the things that Yancey McKnight said is, you have to give me the amount of time that he was at JUCO for me to get the JUCO out of him. So if he was there for a year, you got to give me a year to get the JUCO out of him till he's fully tough enough and physically prepared enough to play. Now with Tucker, he seems to be a little bit of an exception because of how good he is. Now he just has to understand to get in shape and to be tough enough that when he's not 100%, that he can continue to play at a high functioning level. May not be 100%, but his 90% is good enough. We just need to get him from 100% to 90% instead of 100% to 80%.
Pierre Aka is listed as this is why I'm fairly encouraged about the D-line. Remember Robbie Garcia was a starter in game one last year? He's third string now at D-tackle. I mean, I just feel like there's a lot of guys here. None of them are Sean Oakman, obviously. But I feel like you have enough guys here where you actually have some pieces to move around. And I don't remember the last time Iowa State's defensive line has had that. Maybe 2005?
Yeah. Well, this is on paper. Right now.
Correct.
This is on paper. So my question on the defensive line is the fact that these guys have not played. And this is not saying that I'm not excited about it, because I am. I'm just playing. I'm tempering my expectations.
No, this
on the
is good.
Line,
this is, we need this.
Because they're all new. I mean, you've got guys that, from the guys that played last year, you have what? Dale, Trent, Robbie, and
Devlin.
Devlin and Trent Taylor and Vernell Trent. So you have those five guys that played, right?
I mean, yeah, Trent didn't play much. He played a little bit.
Not as he shouldn't have, because he's a redshirt freshman. Redshirt freshman defensive tackles are just they need a little more.
Yeah,
mass.
Well, especially the ones Iowa State generally recruits.
Right, they need to get bigger. So those five guys that played, now add into that Justin Thomas. Add in Gabe Luna's coming off an injury, coming off a redshirt year. You got Bobby Leaf, Justin Thomas. Those
Thomas is.
Though,
dude,
yes, they
are telling you this.
Physically,
give
there.
Him 3-4 games. I think Justin Thomas can be really good. You got to give him the 3-4 games.
I'm just tempering my expectations about it because
yeah,
they are.
No, I get it.
They are really talented, but are they going to reach that talent, or are they going to kind of fizzle out because of a work ethic thing? I've never seen him work. I've never talked to him.
Yeah.
It's not saying they don't have it. It's just saying I don't know if they do have it.
Okay, the 3-4 then.
Okay.
Like, why with these linebackers that I'm looking at, and I've already gone on record, I love Jay Jones and Reagan Northrup. I think we don't know really much about Jordan Harris. He should be okay after having an entire year to watch. He was a JUCO All-American at one point.
And I've heard they love him.
Okay, well, that's encouraging. Kane Seeley's been there for going on his fourth year. He's never really done anything. Levi Peters, I know you're really high on. He's coming off the knee injury.
Yep.
Luke Knott can't stay healthy. You've got Brian Mills and Willie Harvey's not going to play. So my point is, like, why would you want four of those guys on the field?
Because you give your
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes, but it gives you a different look, and it gives you a lot of explosiveness. Because with linebackers, yes, you need depth because they're going to get hurt. But you only really need the starters to be really good. I mean, see Jake and AJ.
Yeah.
So for 2/3 of the year when Jake was healthy, you have Jake, AJ, and then another dude in the middle, whoever's Taufoa or Jeremiah George, just somebody else. That group can be really good. So with this group, like you said, with Jay Jones and Reagan Northrup, those dudes can play. I mean, I've seen it myself. Those dudes can absolutely play. Conceptually, they still have to come along because they're young, but they get it. And then our interior linebackers with Harris and Seeley and Mills, between those three guys, so you have two. So say we're playing four down. I'll reset this before I start talking about people. So how three down works instead of a four down is just, if you're listening to this, close your eyes and picture what I'm trying to tell you here. So in a four down, I'm going to have two guys, two defensive ends on either side of the offensive line, one outside the tackle, the other outside the tackle. Those are called five techniques. There's numbers for where the offensive linemen are. What's called a five technique is outside the tackle.
Okay.
What a shade is on either side of the face mask of the center is called a shade. Then a three technique is just outside the guard. So how a four down line looks is there's 2 5 techniques, a defensive end, a nose tackle at shade, and a defensive tackle at three. What those bodies look like are the five techniques are Trent Taylor, Dale Pearson, ideally Justin Thomas. I mean, they're guys that are long, they're athletic. They don't have to be necessarily that heavy, but they can move. I mean, a guy like Sean Oakman plays this position. Yes, Sean Oakman could play any position in the world on defensive line or offensive line or linebacker, but
tight end
or quarterback. I don't know how he throws, but guys like that, where they're long, athletic, they move pretty well. And that's what the five techniques do, is they're able to get up the field and they're rushing the passer, but they're also athletic enough that if a play gets outside of them, they can run it down. Because they're on the outside of the line, they play contain. That happens often, where you'd see Corey Morrissey tackle a running back from behind because the play starts to get outside of him. He then ditches the tackle, and because he has his outside arm free, he runs down and makes the tackle. So that's his job as a defensive end in a 3-4 or a 4-3. Three technique, what that guy looks like is Brandon Jensen was that guy. Mm-hmm. He was about 290, stout, 6'3", 6'4". Very quick with his hands, doesn't necessarily need to run anybody down, but he's able to move laterally pretty well. He's decently quick. He's pretty effective at what he does of being an athletic big dude. Now, the nose tackle is the best example is a Jake McDonough, where he's explosive, but his main job is to be a pain in the ass for an offensive lineman, to be heavy, to be strong. Your main job is to push someone back and hold your gap as much as you can. If you get the opportunity to make a tackle, which Rhodes really wants defensive linemen to make tackles as opposed to holding blocks, but say you've got a guy like last year, Carl Davis. Carl Davis didn't necessarily make a ton of tackles, but the fact that he was so good because he was just a pain. Like, you had to account for him, or count for Carl Davis and Trinket Passat with two offensive linemen. So now switch that to a 3-4. What a 3-4 is they're going to play a head-up center, head-up nose. So the guy that would be the nose tackle is now face-to-face with the center, one-on-one, straight up like this. Now, in the same light, we just had a shade before, and that means I'm playing as a shade. I have just the guard and the center really to worry about, because the three technique takes care of the other guard. The five technique takes care of the tackle. I've just got two guys. So even though they may be big, like a Jake McDonough, then I still only really have to worry about two guys, 600 pounds of dude. Now in a 3-4, I'm playing a head up nose. Where the other guys are, they're called four. They're at four eye positions. They're essentially head up on the tackles.
Mm-hmm.
So now, as a nose tackle, I've got to be cognizant of three dudes or 900 pounds of human coming at me at any point. So I have to be strong enough and big enough to handle all three. Demond Tucker is a little bit small for that position. Bobby Leith is about the right size. He's 6'3", probably 310, 315, big. I mean, just...
But we shouldn't expect anything from him until game 7 or 8, right?
We shouldn't expect anything early. But what I'm looking at is a position-wise, what a three down line looks like is that nose tackle is Albert Haynesworth. Just a big, I'm not going to call him
fat.
It's
a good example.
But it's just a big lump of a human being. Terrence Cody.
Tony Siragusa.
Tony Siragusa.
Yeah.
Just a big human being. That's his main job is to eat up those guards and just not get moved around so that you have linebackers can run around. What those defensive ends look like are they are more now like three techniques than they are defensive ends. They have to account for both the guard and the tackle. So instead of defensive ends just dealing with a tackle, they now have to deal with 600 pounds of dude instead of 300 pounds of dude. So they've got to be bigger. They've got to be thicker. They have to be where Sean Oakman, again, to use him as an example, where his like perfect ideal fit would be is a four-eye defensive end in a three-down line look, because he's big, he's long, he's athletic enough to move, but he's really just big enough that he can handle everybody. So why do I want four linebackers in the field? Because if
I... Especially of this group.
Especially with that group. So what happens with this is if I've got three down linemen and my linemen are adequate and they're holding up, say, you've got five offensive linemen and you've got three defensive linemen. If my three can take care of your five or even four of them, if they can take up four of your offensive linemen, then you only have one offensive lineman to climb to a linebacker. You've given me, because I have less stuff in front of me, you give linebackers more space to work with, and you give them a lot more different angles because there's there's less things in front of them. They've got a lot more space to run around, to do twists, to do a bunch of different creative blitzes, to do any type of trading of positions. Yeah. There's a lot more freedom that you can have. So with those guys, Kane, Harris, Mills, in the inside, they've got to be just strong enough to take on a guard's head up. Like, because a lot of times, a guard and a tackle are going to double team that nose tackle, and that other guard is going to be completely unoccupied. So my middle linebacker's got to be stout enough to deal with, you know, 300 pounds of dude. Mm-hmm. Does that mean I necessarily have to headbutt him? No, but I can get around him, but I've got to be able to handle a guard one-on-one. Now outside, where Reagan and Jay Jones are perfect is this Clay Matthews spot, where a lot of times they'll shift one of the linebackers up to the line of scrimmage, and he's kind of a pass rusher, contain player, plays kind of more like a defensive end than a linebacker, but can still cover because he has to. So that's the Von Miller, Clay Matthews position. Two inside guys talked about taking on guards. The other guy is kind of like a nickel hybrid linebacker, where he's just a really, really athletic linebacker, where he can cover, he can play man-on-man. He's most likely not going to be involved a ton with the box unless it's a rundown that he sees run. So if it's a pass play, he's not really going to hang out in the middle of the field. He's going to stretch to the sidelines. What that guy would be in a 3-4 is Levi. And the job description of an outside linebacker, this would be the Will, the Buck, depending on whatever they call him, the fourth guy.
They call him the Will right now.
So we leave, and that's in the four down.
Oh, yeah.
They call him Will in the four down.
I'm looking at their deceptive depth chart here.
So let's say we're running a three down, and you've got these four linebackers, and what I'll call the Buck linebacker is the fourth one. What Levi is, what the Buck linebacker's job description is run around and make plays. Does that sound like Levi Peters?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's his description to a T.
That's his life.
Yeah.
So because of where he's going to be at in the field, a lot of his run fits, because the defensive end is out or is inside of the tackle, what his run fits are going to be is hard contain. How hard contain differs from contain is the fact that in contain, I kind of keep my outside arm free just so I can float and run with it. What a hard contain is I run 800 miles an hour, and if you're a guard and you're pulling around to pin me, I hit you in the sternum with my shoulder, and I force you back, and I literally put a cup on the play. And the running back then has to run inside of it. So I'm not looking to try and make a play outside of it. I'm looking to literally set an edge and force you to run upfield. So Levi Peters, in that same sentence, starts 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. A guard is pulling 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage. He gets to run 20 feet full speed and hit a dude as hard as he can with one shoulder and keep the other one free. Perfect for Levi.
Okay.
Other position, or his other job and pass responsibilities, a lot of going to be kind of running to the flat or a hook zone, and then any type of man coverage. So he's going to have to get that coverage down. But really, his main job is going to be run fits to that side. That position is perfect for
That's Levi. Interesting. So we'll see. We don't really know how much of that will be played, but it was talked about last week when camp started. That's a good rundown, though, Jeff. I feel like I learned a lot about the 3-4 there.
I love it if they do it. And I don't know if they're going to do it or if they're not going to do it, because Rhodes and Wally and Shane, they're all pretty old-fashioned. Shane's the most new school of them all, just because he's the youngest. But Rhodes and Wally are a little bit old school, so I wouldn't I'm not really expecting it to happen, but if they do go to it more than they have in the past and they practice it more than they have in the past, I love it. I mean,
interesting because, I mean, like I told you when we started this, when I look at the linebackers, I'm like, why would you want more of those guys out on the field? Mm-hmm. But that is some clarity. That does offer some clarity. I know you have to go. Let's do this next week, too.
I'm okay. I'm okay with doing that.
Up until the season starts, we appreciate it. Man, like I feel like we could have done this for 4 hours because we didn't talk about the wide receivers.
They're really good.
We haven't even hit on the secondary, which
they're pretty good.
Strength of the defense.
Mm-hmm.
We just talked about all the weaknesses. Look at us.
Oh, it's trying to find the least of them and yes. Talk about them the most.
Correct. You gotta. That's what in the physical training world. That's what they tell you to work on your weaknesses.
Find your
right?
weaknesses. If you know you're not a good runner, you're probably a reason why you're not a good runner might be your heart rate. But if your heart rate's not good enough to run, you should probably run. I mean,
so when I'm in the gym, my weakness is pretty much everything. Where do I start?
Everything. Just get better. Do better, Chris.
Filthy 50, right?
Ugh.
Brutal.
Ugh.
All right. Thanks to Jeff Woody. We'll be back. We'll do one of these next week. The FawCast is coming up tomorrow. Bloom and I need to get together and we've got a couple more summer series podcasts from Buffalo Wild Wings to get to as well. Hey, coming up tonight, Wednesday night, Ross Peterson and I are going to give our Cy-Hawk predictions, our season predictions. Mm. That's coming up tonight on Sports Fanatics on KXNO. So tune into that.
I'm not going to be on the show. Can I give mine now?
Yeah. What's your prediction? Give me a record.
The score?
No. Not for the Cy-Hawk game. Like our game by game predictions for the Clones and the Hawks.
Okay. I'm going to go Iowa being 8-4, Iowa State 6-6.
Okay. I think I was going to go 5-7 and 7-5.
So we're close.
Yeah. I haven't gotten to Iowa yet.
I just think that the bottom of the Big Ten is bad.
Yeah, it's terrible.
So you can win against the bottom of the Big Ten. The top of the Big Ten now has been
I think Iowa's biggest problem is going to be their non-conference. I mean, Illinois State's good. They should win that game.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Iowa State beats Iowa.
I think so, too. Obviously biased.
Pitt. You got Pitt at home. You should win that game. But that Pitt on paper is better than Iowa, according to most projections.
Before we go, my one thing on Iowa is that I think C.J. Beathard is a very good quarterback, and I think he's going to make the offense more explosive because he will give the philosophical middle finger to Greg Davis. Because the reason why Iowa's offense is so stagnant, you can tell your Hawkeye friends. I doubt many Hawkeyes are listening to this.
More than you
podcast.
Think, actually.
Really?
More than you would think.
Nice. So if you're a Hawkeye fan, or if you know a Hawkeye fan, one of the reasons this is me looking, and I've not specifically talked to any of the quarterbacks at Iowa. I've never talked to Rudock, or I've not talked to Vandenberg or anything. But from what I'm looking at from the outside, looking at Davis when he was at Texas and when he was at Iowa, how his reads work as I'm reading through the progression. And a progression means is my primary option, say I've got five wide receivers or five eligible receivers. My first option is going to be Ware, and my second option is going to be Ware. And my progression is going to be from first to last. What progressions should be, and what Herman always coached, and how Cardale Jones was so good, is because Ohio State's progressions and good offenses progressions are long to short, to where if there are, say, in that situation, we've got five eligible receivers. Two are running goes on the outside. They're running just straight down the field. Two are running a dig at, say, 12 yards. And one is running an out route at 5 yards. If you read long to short, philosophically, if one of the guys running a go, one of the guys running a dig, and the guy running the out, are all three of them are open, if I'm reading long to short, I throw go first, dig second, out third. What Davis's reads, it appears to me, are short to long. Because the reasoning behind that is because they're higher percentage. It's more of a West Coast style where I can read short to long. I know that I can complete this pass because even though that guy might be open, I'm missing an open receiver down low because it's an easier pass to make when it's 20 yards instead of 70. So if I'm reading long to short, I get those big plays. If I'm reading short to long, it doesn't matter if a guy's running wide open. I don't see him because I'm taught to read short to long. And I think that's what Rudock did, because Rudock is a coachable dude. He's a med student. So he's a guy that wants to take instruction. The instruction from Greg Davis is short to long, which is why you'd see a 3-yard out on a 3rd and 6. Now, C.J. Beathard will give the chance to make that offense good is he'll give the philosophical middle finger to Greg Davis and go, I see a guy running open on a go. I'm going to throw the damn go.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to skip on that out route. Now, they don't have anybody to kick Beathard out of that position. They got nobody. True. Nobody's going to compete for him with this or compete with him for the spot. So if Iowa's offense were to get better, it's going to be in spite of Greg Davis as opposed to because of Greg Davis. Because Beathard is a guy that's going to huck it long because he wants to huck it long. It's like Steel Jans. Does what he wants to do just because he wants to do it. So Iowa has a chance to be good, or they have a chance to have a lot of turmoil because Davis is pissed at Beathard and Beathard's pissed at Davis, and there's not a lot of happiness that's going on here, and there's a little bit of resentment, and the offense isn't working as a good unit. So I'm interested to see how this whole Beathard-Davis thing works out.
And you're giving an optimistic projection with Iowa State, too.
Yep.
At 6-6.
Because I think they win – if they win, you and I, Iowa, Toledo.
If I am losing to Toledo.
Toledo graduated all five offensive linemen.
Yeah, I know. But they've got a lot coming back, too, though.
I'm not that high on Toledo.
You're not?
No.
Maybe you talk me out of it. I'm going to do another I'll do another line of research before I make that projection.
And I will too. But
okay.
I think if they get 1-2-3, even though if they go 2-1, then you get Kansas, then you've got three games later in the year that you have to have some type of win. Kansas State's an option.
Texas
is an option. And then TCU, Baylor, Oklahoma State, or Oklahoma, excuse me, probably aren't going to happen.
But Oklahoma State at home, you never know.
Oklahoma State, you never know at home. Then you've got, who else? I'm missing somebody.
They won't beat Texas Tech on the road, in my opinion.
We'll see. I don't know. I don't know what
I've got
old
that,
Kingsbury's cooking.
I've got that chalked up as a loss.
They've got...
Well, if you change my mind on Toledo, which you're... I know about the offensive linemen, but they're still pretty good.
Yeah.
I guess that comes down to me where I don't believe that these guys can win five games in a row. I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the most difficult non-conference game. So I'm kind of giving him a loss there by default. And it's on the road. And it's a lot of times a hornet's nest when these Power 5 schools go into the...
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what Toledo's packing as far as a crowd goes either.
I wouldn't say it's probably stellar.
Were you on the Chizik team that went there?
Nope. They went to Kent, didn't they?
No, they played at Toledo, too. It was a near...
Because that A team,
maybe
A cycling
it was
team,
Kent.
Played against Kent State because they played against Julian Edelman.
Didn't Kent State beat Iowa State 2 years in a row?
I think so.
Yeah.
Because of Edelman.
Yeah.
Quarterback Julian Edelman.
Yeah.
Now, Super Bowl hero,
yeah.
Julian Edelman.
Crazy times. Jeff, good stuff, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate your time.
It's always fun.
Appreciate your time. Jeff Woody, we'll be back next week. We'll talk some Cyclone football. Hope you guys enjoyed it. A lot coming up later in the week. Fall camp is here. Enjoy our coverage all week long at Cyclone Fanatics. Stay tuned for more. Later, guys.